Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good morning, LA. Good morning, fellas. Obviously, an incredibly emotional, difficult, scary, all of the emotions that you can imagine weekend. It is good to hear your voices. It is good to talk to you. And like we just heard Chris say, we're going to get a chance to talk to some people today, the people here in LA, of everything that has taken place here locally and nationally. And it is just, this is usually the part of the day where we talk about what we did this weekend. And this is also one of those weekends where I know exactly what we all did this weekend because we were all doing the same thing. We were all sitting and watching television. LZ, in your case, you were out on the streets with the people covering the events here in Los Angeles. It was one of those weekends that we're going to remember for a long time. And we were all just sitting here and watching it and absorbing it and being confused by it.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, Travis, I came back into the city yesterday because I just needed to be here. Many of you who listen to our show know that I've been spending the bulk of this quarantine time in Arizona. But this weekend, as I was writing pieces, as I was, doing interviews on television, I knew that I needed to get out of hibernation. I had been chilling in this space for a while. I've been trying to keep myself in a different place mentally for a while. But, as things started to escalate, and I just felt the pull. And so yesterday, I we got back. I left early in the morning. My husband and I drove over, and I didn't even get anything to eat. I immediately hit the streets and went to work because I needed to make sure that I bear witness to what was going on. And, we're going to talk about a lot of things today. What happened, what shouldn't be allowed, why the looters, what the protesters want. But more importantly, we're also going to talk about what you can do next. We've been doing this loop just here in Los Angeles for a good 30 years now. We just want to start with Rodney King. Let's talk about some solutions. Let's talk about some changes that need to be made. And let's just be real with one another.
In terms of, the weekend, for me, it started off Friday, with the kids and kind of figuring, I get out and just get out and enjoy the day. And it was time to pick up dinner. So I went out to Westlake Village, California, which is, a few miles from here. Went out, hung out at the park around there, went walking with the kids, playing, throwing the ball with Vance, letting him shoot some hoops, just hanging out. Then we went to get a bite to eat, and we passed the intersection of Thousand Oaks Boulevard in Westlake. And it was empty. We picked up our food. It took us about 20, 25 minutes. I came back out and four sections of corners was completely crowded with a number of protesters with big signs and all of a sudden there was this warmth that came through my body and I was compelled to step out of my vehicle, something I probably would never do in a normal circumstance, is step out of my car and just acknowledge those people that were on those corners with those signs protesting everything that's going on in Westlake Village. Westlake Village is, if by all means, probably the whitest community in the Ventura County area. And to see them aligned with what the minorities are feeling and what we feel and how that just, it brought joy of tears to me. And I posted it on my social media accounts that I do have. And then as the weekend went on, I decided yesterday that I was going to, as I'm watching, I was going to take my 8-year-old son Vance and my 10-year-old daughter London. We was going and Jennifer. We was getting ready to go on a ride because they've never gone on a deep road with me through the neighborhood I grew up in, through Watts, through all the different areas. So I took them to get them some ice the colorful flavored ice that they like. And then I took them to Watts, drove down through Watts, crossed over, was on Western and 87th. So I wanted them to see the areas. Then I drove all the way down Normandy and Florence, where the Reginald Denny Rodney King situation took place. And then I drove them through my neighborhood, and I took the streets, didn't get on the freeway. And I just drove from neighborhood to neighborhood, explaining to them the 1960s riots to the Rodney King situation to where we are today. Took them all around Melrose. I took them through Beverly Hills. I took them through all the areas that was hit on Saturday to give them a perspective of life so they can really understand being behind these gates is different than being out in that. That's the real world. And I wanted them to understand why people were acting out a certain way, why they were protesting, why people decided to loot certain stores versus other stores. Giving them a real education. People say, well, why are the looters taking tennis shoes and things of this nature when they can be hitting the brand stores, the ones with the big brands? And I had to educate them on why that all goes together, why they passed up this store versus this store, because they know that this is where their focus is in life. This is where they spend their money. This is value to them. A pair of Air Jordans is value to them opposed to Louis Vuitton. In how the police forces in certain areas like Beverly Hills wasn't going to allow you to loot and completely destroy their property, where if you go on Melrose and you in the L.A. situation, mom and pop shops, they was just going to allow them to completely destroy those. It's all. So I wanted them to know these sort of things, because this ain't just today. This is not new from yesterday. This is from many, many, many years ago. You know, you go back into the 1992 riots, which I was a part of, and I'll speak to that as we continue to talk about these shows. As an 18-year-old kid, I remember it like it was yesterday. But we destroyed our own neighborhoods, and our own neighborhoods is yet to be rebuilt till this day. I mean, I helped try and revitalize parts of our areas when I was playing football, help build shopping centers and bring Home Depots and Starbucks into it. But it took forever to even get to that point. And so now you can start to understand why we have decided as this young culture to move into other areas of looting versus our own neighborhoods like we did before, because there's nothing there. We already took care of that, and there's nothing there, and it hasn't been revitalized for a number of reasons.
You know, Key, you and I spoke on, I think it was Saturday night, and you were talking about what you saw out in Westlake, you just mentioned a couple of minutes ago. And I don't want to say that this was the one that made everybody react, because we've reacted before, and we've been angry before, and we've been upset before, and we've seen people speak out before and protest before. Why was this the one that made you feel differently than you have previously? Why was that the one that made you feel as emotional as you just described? Because your experience is not unlike, I think, a lot of other people's experience as well, which is just, they're just, you know, we see terrible things happen, and we see the reaction to terrible things happen. And sometimes it hits us emotionally one way, and sometimes it hits us differently another way. And I'm just, because I hear what you're saying, but I can't quite put my finger on why this one felt, this protest or that protest that you saw feels differently than the others. Because I agree with you, it felt different to me too, to see all these different places around the country reacting the way that they did. Why this time? Why was this the one?
Travis, in 1992, I was 18 years old. I'm going to be 48 years old. I didn't have kids. I didn't have a son, a daughter, another son, another daughter. I didn't have that. It was me. It was me and my friends. My mom grew up seeing the riots in Watts. She tried to explain it to me best she could, but I didn't understand being so young. Now, when I go back and I think about 1992, and I look back at it, everybody wasn't with us. White people was not aligned with us. Okay, period. They were not. We were out on the edge by ourselves, on the cliff by ourselves. Now, everybody is with us, and everybody is feeling the way we feel and the way we've been feeling. So when you see that, it's touching. I have kids. I have son. I have a son that has the fear of the police at 8 years old, believe it or not. When he hears sirens, and this just didn't happen over the last several days. This has been going on for quite some time. When he hears sirens, it freaks him out. If the police siren is on, and they behind us four cars and going to somebody else, he automatically assumes they're coming to us. And I had to ask him the other day, why you think that, man? He said, because they always messing with black people. His mind has been shifted so much that that's the way he thinks. Both Jennifer and I keep trying to tell him, don't live in fear. His pediatrician had to tell him a while ago the same thing. Don't live in fear. It's not, the needle's not going to hurt you, because his mind. So to me, I want my kids to understand all of those sort of things and to be able to be in Westlake again, what I would consider the whitest little town in Ventura County, and to see them align on every single corner. Not for the media. They weren't doing it for the media. They weren't out there just because. You can look and see and feel in those people's eyes that they feel the same pain and the hurt that the minority community feels. Okay, because yes, it's about Black Lives Matter, and it's about black this and that, but it's also about brown people too. It's also about minorities, people of color. Because for so long, people have turned their heads the other way. And now all of a sudden you look up and it's not like that anymore. It's not like that anymore. There's voices from all over the place. I mean, I was talking to a friend last night, and I was telling him, I said, man, they protesting in Utah. Okay.
Yeah.
They're protesting in Utah. Like, seriously? Like, you would never in mind think of nothing like that. They're over in the UK protesting. It's just not something that we grew up seeing with our own eyes. Colorado, they're protesting.
Let's talk more about those protests. Let's talk some of the ones that are nationally, some of the ones that are locally, or I should say local, like you mentioned, as well, Key, plus some of the voices as well. If you're listening and you want to weigh in and you want to talk about what you're experiencing, what you're feeling, 877-710-ESPN. We're going to do all that when we come back on the morning show on 710-ESPN. That's the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, right there. And guys, I think what he said right there is pretty apt, because you know you watch this. I got the news on in front of me. Usually you sit here and you have the television on, you're watching Sports Center and Get Up or whatever else we might be talking about on any given day, and it's just endless footage of things getting broken and smashed, and it breaks my heart, because we're not talking about George Floyd or Ahmaud Arbery or Breonna Taylor. We're talking about swords being looted and burned and things. And we've already moved on to the violence portion of this, as opposed to the protest portion of this, which is the much more powerful content and it's a much more important conversation.
This is what we do. This is what we do. This is the media, and I can talk about this because, obviously, I've been all up in it from a variety of perspectives for a long time. We look for this because we recognize that images of fire, conflict, smoke, broken windows, we know that's what grabs people's attention. And so we look for that. Before we talk about the violence in the streets, let's back up a little bit and talk about Kaepernick's protest. If you recall, it went from being, this is why he's on his knee, to let's just count the people on their knees. Let's see who's on their knees. And as the message is being watered down from being focused in on the why to the visual of the what, Then people started to infiltrate the message with saying they're protesting the military. They're protesting America. They're protesting the Star Spangled Banner. They shouldn't be doing that. So all of a sudden, what started off as a conversation, Colin Kaepernick is on his knee because he wants to see change in criminal justice reform. It went from that message and that one image to last week we had three Rams and we had two Dolphins and we had a jet on their knee. And you just started counting. And then all of a sudden, people started to say, why are they protesting the flag? Why are they protesting this? Why are they protesting that? This is what we do. And so when you get to your point, Travis, about the riots, we were looking for the riots because the message doesn't sell. It's hard to grab people with
but LZ
with
the didn't, message. And I don't mean to interrupt, but it did seem that people were listening to the message, that the footage of George Floyd, and I know that there's been footage of other people as well. I understand that. But this one seemed to be the message, at least the reaction to it, did seem to be resonating a little bit differently. There, we saw a variety of people in the sports world, in the entertainment world, in the political world, responding
to this. But Trav, remember, in the right direction.
They responded to Eric Grant in the same way. I was in the streets. I saw it myself.
But and LZ said, and Travis?
And we said it was going to be different. We saw the coalition. We saw, but the coverage to your initial statement, we still were looking for the visuals of the riots and the looting. We reported the message, but then we were also looking for the visual. And that's what sells. And that's what we do. It's a cycle.
And if you go back to last week, when all this really started to kick off, the one thing that I said is I hope that it doesn't get to this. We're not going to relive 1992. I could see it coming. I can see it building up to the point of what I said a week ago is where we're at today. Because it's clear you can see it. That wasn't from a media standpoint. That story, the images is not good enough. Showing a black man and showing some protesters with fists and hands in the air, that's too cute. That's too clean. That's too positive. Showing 7,000 white people land on the ground in Colorado with their hands behind their back, face down in a protest, that's too cute. They don't want that. They want to be able to show burning buildings, people running in and out of the buildings, parking their cars on the sidewalk, breaking glass, trying to break in the stuff. They want to see that because guess what that said? Oh, they're out of control. See, how can they get anything done when they're doing these sort of things? Until people realize, well, it ain't the protesters. These are young individuals, people of poverty, people that are looking for something, maybe out of work. The pandemic has struck. That until they start understanding those sort of things, they're going to keep selling the image of we're never going to give them what they're looking for. And they're never going to be able to take what they're looking for because this is the only thing that they care about taking. Tennis shoes, clothes, grocery stores, foods, destroying people's property. Because that is the sexier thing. Watching the police push them over in their vehicles illegally, as far as I'm concerned, mowing people down with their own police vehicles, not necessarily protecting and serving, but provoking. That is better for the eyes of the camera and the television viewers. Again, not people sitting up there giving a positive message on why and explaining to everyone why the other three officers are
so. How do you keep it on the positive message? How do you keep it on the positive message about the protest, about the outrage surrounding what has taken place historically, more recently, to not go to step B, to stay on step A, the outrage with George Floyd, the outrage with Ahmaud Arbery? How does that story maintain its intensity, maintain its passion for people so we don't move on to the next step, so we don't move on to the violence?
Us. It starts with us right here. If you're in the media, you have a platform. if you're touching on this conversation, you can frame the conversation that you want to focus in on however you want. So it starts right here on this very show, and the shows after us and the shows before us. Whether it's a sports show, a news show, a podcast, it starts with the media. We report the facts. But in the structure of our presentation, we're also direct you towards what we have viewed as the most important of facts. So we can do that if we so choose. We can sit here and focus in on the violence and the looters, and we can show you the imagery, and we can talk about the damage, and we can interview, you know, owners, and we can talk to community people who are against it, and we could package something real nice and slick, and you would eat it up. But we can do the exact same things about the message if we wanted to. So it starts with us. And then from there, it goes to the people who are listening, people on social media. Because when you say the media, please note that social media is part of the media. So if you don't want to see the message get turned towards the violence and the loss and the grief, and you want to stay focused on the message, use your individual platform to do that. You can choose what to retweet. You can choose what to post. That's in your hands as well. So to answer your question, Travis, how do you stay focused on the message? You stay focused on the message by staying focused on the message. There's no trick to it. There's no silver bullet. It's really simple. Whatever you gravitate towards, that's what you want. If you find yourself as a news director putting together a segment and all you see is fire and smoke, when I personally saw people handing out whole pizzas in their vehicles, handing out water, snacks, what I saw was a whole lot of love in those streets yesterday. But you could put together a new segment where you can show the opposite, and that too will be accurate. I'm not saying it's not accurate. That too will be accurate. But as people who are in social media or people who are making decisions on coverage, which facts you choose to focus in on is what you're saying is most important.
And if you get an overflood of the negativity on social media or in the media, that's what people going to focus on. As I took my kids around, my daughter, London, was asking to protest and to help. And I told her, I said, well, maybe tomorrow, we can't do it today because it's too late in the day and there's a curfew and this and that. Maybe later today, or the next day, tomorrow, we could stop by a store, get some brooms, get some stuff, and we can go. And she wanted to do it. She asked 1,000 times. And I'm like, I'm not prepared to do it right now. Maybe tomorrow we may be able to do that. Let's see. Because if you send in that type of message, that's a positive message. You know, she didn't ask to go spray paint buildings. She didn't ask to take her phone out and put it on TikTok and look at all the graffiti. That's not what she was talking about. She was talking about help the people clean up their businesses down Melrose, down Fairfax Boulevard, down Robinson Boulevard. Some of the places that we ventured to, she was asking, how can we participate in those things? That's all positive stuff.
I think,
and that is the focus.
There's a lot of people, celebrities from the sports world, the entertainment world, that have lent their voice to this as well. A lot like what you were talking about, LZ. We'll talk about some of those people. That is coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
That, of course, is Laker great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's always thoughtful in moments like this. Guys, and you just, you know, Kareem is one of them. And if you turned on the television or your computer or your phone, there's just an endless list of celebrities that are lending their voice to this. And maybe, LZ, maybe that's what you were alluding to earlier, that if the people that have a voice that other people are listening to, this is how we stay more on message as opposed to look what I'm looking at right now, which is, you know, the National Guard with their guns drawn and surrounding city buildings and fires and broken windows, that if we stay on message from, especially if it's people with a platform, like you mentioned, far more effective.
Yeah, but remember, we all have platforms. Some are certainly larger than others, but we all have platforms. You know, so you can approach it one way or another. You can say with your left hand, you ball it up in the fist, and you get a big name like Beyonce tweeting something, and bam, you got a big, powerful message. And sure, on the right side, if you have one finger, the message is not as big, obviously. But if you, the more fingers you put up, then you'll be able to make a fist, and then your message can be just as powerful as Beyonce's message if enough of us pull together. So you don't need someone who's a one percenter or has a million followers on Twitter to say something, to do something. You can do that too in and of yourself, even if you only got five followers, because you know what? That one follower that follows you may have 100 followers, and then that person may have 10,000 followers. So you never know kind of chain reaction you can do when you send some positivity into the world. Don't wait for someone else to be positive. You can be positive in and of yourself.
But it's always good, though, to have the celebrities and the athletes get involved from a positive standpoint. Obviously, Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, you know, those guys that are older than us did it way back when. But it was lost at some point in time in professional sports, in entertainment, because people were protecting their own brands. People were deciding that they needed to build their wealth beforehand. The money was different then than it is now. Now the money is so greater, the family is secured, thing they don't feel as condemned anymore. So now they could unleash, they can release, they could vent their frustrations that they've had over so many years of sitting back and watching it. And now they have bigger platforms. They're now able to voice their opinions. People are able to listen to them, get out in front, be a part of the solution and not necessarily the problem. Those sort of things certainly are happening before our eyes every single day, whether it's LeBron James, whether it's John Legend and his wife, Chrissy Teigen, whether it's Oprah Winfrey, whether it's J.J. Watt, whether it's a guy like Joe Burrow, who's a young rookie who grew up in Cincinnati in Ohio, who played ball in Louisiana. So he has two different perspectives of a region. I mean, all of those sort of things. Carson Wentz comes out. He says something on the social media along with his tight end, Zach Ertz. So all of those sort of things are platforms and messages that we certainly need. But will it change anything just because those messages are being sent? Or the people who seeing them listening, the people that are in charge that make the decisions at the top level listening, or are they simply ignoring what everybody's saying? That's the key.
The answer to the question, Key, is, I mean, you said it at the beginning of the show back in 1992. We've been through this before. We've seen unrest multiple times, not just here in LA, but in other cities in this country. We've seen it happen over and over and over again, and something like this will happen, and we'll react to it, and we'll say we're going to change this, we're going to change that, and people are going to do this, that, and the next thing, and then nothing really changes. And then you fast forward another 10, 20, whatever, how many decades it takes, and you get another one. And there's another moment that sparks this, and then here we go again, and another 30 years have gone off the calendar, and we're roughly in the same place.
Well, more than 30 years. This country was founded on unrest. Okay, and I'm not going to get too academic with it, but what I will say is this. We were founded in unrest. We were built on the backs of unrest. We moved towards laws that created a system in which the unrest was quieted, but it was still unrest. And here we are today, still in that quiet unrest. So I would say what needs to change is elements of the system that fosters a distrust between the minority community and the criminal justice system. This thing has always been built on distrust, and we're not going to correct it until we change things in the system so that there can be trust.
Like, and what? The interesting thing is, I go back to the police commission. And I go back to how it's the makeup and the city councilmen are on the police commission. The one percenters or billionaires are on police commissions. Nobody from the real community. There's no real voices. There's no athletes. There's no entertainers. There's no working class people from the community on these police commissions that make up the bylaws and do help do all of these things with the police chief. There's none of that. And until you get those people and you put rules in place, you know how they like in sports, for instance, there's rules that are in place and you have to follow. And if you don't, you will be suspended or you will be cut and released. Where are they mm-hmm. at on the police side? Where are they? Who's making these rules up? The police commission? How many minorities are on the police commission? Just like how many minorities, as LZ says, this has been going on for a long time. You can equate it to the NFL and to football. Why are minority coaches being hired at the top levels, executive at the top, so that the people that look like you can be hired and put in these positions? You want us to talk to the players and keep the players in line and under control when they are mad at you as an owner, but you don't want to hire us to run the teams or coach the teams. And that's the same thing from the police side. You don't, we're not head of commissions. We're not running stuff the way it needs to be done. There's no real rules in place. You know, there's no, the body cams, when you step out the car, the body cam's supposed to automatically come on. Let's figure out how that works. You figure out everything else worked in science. You figure out everything else worked in communication. Let's figure out how to take them body cams. And the moment that an officer step out that car, that body cam comes on immediately. And it never goes off. How come there's no central location for those body cams? We got central locations in the newsroom where cameras is rolling and we can get the feedback to a central location. Why we can't get a central location on those body cams? What a central location is sitting there with a panel of people watching every damn move you make. Yeah, you say, well, it's going to cost money. Well, there's a whole lot of things cost money. We buy military weapons and all sorts of things. We funneling money to our homeboys who own companies that may be in a little bit of distress, but we figure out how to get them $200 and $300 million. Why we can't figure out how to get that communication to the LAPD and that control center? I mean, think about it. Think about it. If you got the right voices on that right platform and that right commissions, they gonna tell them people these are the things we need to be doing. We need to be up in Silicon Valley with these techs trying to figure out. Now just think for a minute. Just take the Floyd incident for a minute. Now this is fast forward thinking. If those police officers step out that vehicle and it triggers those body cams and they don't have to turn them on themselves, then we won't have no excuses. I forgot it wasn't working. None of that. And there was a central location for that particular police department where you had a number of people monitoring their moves. You don't think that that would make a lot of change on their behavior? Because if you do something wrong, guess what? We got it and it's live and we see it. We won't have to depend on whether or not who this. No, we got it right here. Here it go. But we can figure out, again, we can figure out how to monitor what we want to monitor. We can monitor cell phones. We can tap into that and listen to people communications that's selling drugs and doing things. But we can't come up with a body cam when the dude step out the car, huh? But we know how to take our little eye buds yeah. and do that and hook it up to our phones and our cars automatically.
Let's continue this conversation. Don't get me started. No, I want you to get started, and I want to continue the conversation. Also, Lavelle Moten, who is the head basketball coach at North Carolina Central University, had something to say about some of his colleagues that I think is very powerful as well. You'll hear that coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. That voice you heard right there is Lavelle Moten, who is the head basketball coach at North Carolina Central University, and his comments got a lot of attention because, you know, I don't want to say you haven't heard anything from anybody, but it is interesting to hear who we have not heard from. There are a lot of people in the situation that he just described that have really not said a whole lot. I mean, I can't imagine it wouldn't have an incredible amount of impact like we were talking about. You know, and I hear what you're saying, LZ, that if you have a small platform, that doesn't mean you can't say something. But if you do have a large platform and you say nothing, or you certainly go out of your way to parse your words particularly carefully, that's sending an entirely different message.
Well, you know, it is interesting, the people who have been silent in terms of using their platform. But honestly, I'm more bothered by the individuals who use their platform but do nothing to follow up. I've seen years and years of politicians, people of note, sending out thoughts and prayers, demanding justice, retweeting video with crying emojis. I've seen plenty of that. Plenty. What I don't see in these meetings I attend, in these conversations that I'm having with people with a certain amount of authority or power, what I don't see is your presence, your involvement, you rolling up your sleeves and backing up the things you tweeted. That's a big part of this problem. Particularly the ones who happen to be white and consider themselves not racist, non-racist. That's not good enough. You need to be anti-racist. And this is why. If you were thirsty and I poured you a glass of water, you would drink it. But if you were thirsty and I poured you a glass of water and then spat in it, you would not. That spit is racism. So you can do all the good things you want in your life. Donate to the right causes, tweet the right things. But that little drop of racism you allow to fester ruins the whole glass of water. So to my non-racist, let me tell you, you either get to the anti-racist side or just step aside, because you're not helping, you're exacerbating.
Well, I think, it's like anything, man. Everybody handles things differently in life, whether you grieve a certain way. You know, in these situations, they tweet things out, they say things, but they're not out following up from a vocal standpoint because they feel as though they've done their duty and their job. So now, by the time you look up, everything else has moved on. There's no need to do the follow-up. There's no need to come back because I've donated. I've donated. They've got something. I've donated. I've given something to that. I need to continue to protect my brand and move on. That's what it boils down to. And it's about time that those sort of things stop to a point where you can't worry about brands when lives are being lost and right before your eyes and you feel such a certain way. You know, I had to have a conversation with a friend last night about we live behind these gates, man. What, you know, because he was trying to talk to me and you know, have a open conversation about what's going on in the world from the looting standpoint. And I had to explain to him, everybody can't get these jobs that you just think that, you know, there's jobs that's out there that people could just fill out applications and go get. It doesn't work like that. The reality of it is what you see happening right now is people that's out of work, that's in poverty, that's seizing the opportunity that they feel they need to go get something. It ain't just simple as me and you. We can sit down behind these gates, sip our wine and watch them on television. You know, yeah, you may go around doing Christmas time, giving out gifts, or you may be shaking some hands here and there. But what else is you really doing? Are you really with it? Or are you really against it?
Let's take a listen, fellas, to a little bit longer cut from Lavelle Morton. Again, he is the head basketball coach in North Carolina, the North Carolina Central University, talking about some of his colleagues, specifically his colleagues at Power Five schools, the white head coaches in those schools.
Come across the timelines. of coaches, everyone is silent. And I have a major issue with that. And for years, I've never really said anything. But now I think enough is enough, because here's the harsh reality. We have coaches in Power Five, football and basketball coaches. The reality is a lot of these coaches have been able to create generational wealth. I mean, their grandkids' kids are going to be able to live a prosperous life, because athletes who were the complexion of George Floyd was able to run a football, throw a football, shoot a basketball, or whatever have you. So they have benefited greatly from athletes that look like George Floyd and many more. But whenever people the complexion of George Floyd is killed, assassinated, murdered in the street in broad daylight, they're silent. And I have a problem with that, because it seems as if black lives matter to them whenever they can benefit from it, right? Whenever they're getting them a first down, or, you know, catching a alley-oop or shooting a three or whatever. But when it's time for the humanity to speak up on behalf of those student-athletes, it's silence. It's cricket. And so my problem is, if the murdering of black Americans is too risky of an issue for you to stand up as a leader, then who are they really playing for?
Well, you know, when you talk about coaches and generational wealth, you're talking about a handful of coaches, and the majority of them are white coaches that's never, ever had to deal with something so close to them like what we see in the day. They're behind their gates. They're on their big farms. They don't have to endure any of those issues that we deal with. They just don't have to do it. There's not a whole lot of long-term successful minority coaches, and the ones that we do see are out there saying something, have been out there saying something for years, whether it was John Thompson, John Chaney, whoever, Doc Rivers. But when you start talking about some of these other coaches that's out in football and in basketball that has been around for a long time, they've never had to endure any of these sort of things. So to them, they don't really understand it. No matter what you try and tell them, people don't understand it, what's going on, even if they've been around for a long time, because they've never been in it. They don't. They go behind their gates. They go on their big 4-acre lake farms, and they chill, and they watch it on the news and say, well, what a shame. And that's all. That's all they do. So you ain't going to never get nothing from them.
Dr. Harry Edwards, a sociologist who you hear frequently, he's going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on all of this. Plus, like to hear from you as well. 877-710-ESPN. That's all coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.